In this second hour of the show, we'll be continuing to talk about healthcare and healthcare costs, although in this hour, we'll be concentrating on one subject in particular, and that is prescription drugs. One of the things certainly we know is that costs of prescription medications have, in recent years, been going up dramatically. And for a lot of people, it's a big piece of their healthcare bill. And in fact, there are people who have a very difficult time affording their prescription medications. We'll talk a little bit this morning about some of the issues involved with our guest, Larry Sasek. He is a pharmacist. He's also a research associate with Public Citizens Health Research Group. And he is principal author of a book that they have been putting out now for a number of years, a book titled Worst Pills, Best Pills, which, among other things, makes recommendations on medicines that people should avoid and also makes recommendations for less expensive, more effective alternatives. That's a book that's out there in the bookstore, and certainly if you want to take a look at it, you can go out there and seek it out. Also, of course, Public Citizen has a website and has a lot of information on various consumer topics, including healthcare. And there is a section there that deals with various healthcare issues and prescription drug issues among them. So that's certainly something that you can check out, too, if you have internet access. And that is, for that specific site, it's www.worstpills.com. worstpills.org. Or you can just go to the Public Citizen website and see what's there. As I say, there's information on a lot of different subjects. Questions are welcome, of course, here in this part of Focus 580. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good to any place that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So 333-9455. Here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Mr. Sasek, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
In the first part of the show, we were talking in a kind of a general, sort of general terms about the cost of healthcare, how those costs have gone up, what are some of the problems associated with them, and so forth. And I'm wondering if you have this, have some of these kind of numbers at your fingertips, if you can say something about how in the last, maybe 10 years or so, the cost of prescription drugs has gone up, because certainly we know that they have.
Well, certainly, I think for the last at least the last 10 years, the cost of prescription drugs has been two or three times what general inflation has been, and certainly the cost of prescription drugs is the largest growing segment of the healthcare budget in the United States at this time.
Mm. Is there any way to talk about how many people are having difficulty affording their medicines? Because we certainly do hear from time to time anecdotal evidence about people having to make choices between having their medicine and spending money on other things, or they're doing things like they're getting their prescriptions filled, but they're not taking the appropriate dosage because they're trying to make the medicines go further, and so they're they're splitting pills, or they're not taking it the way they should, or maybe there are some people who are simply going without because they can't afford it. I mean, are there reliable numbers that you can put on an issue like that?
I would be afraid to try and make an exact estimate of the number of people that are involved, but certainly the group at greatest risk are those without prescription drug coverage, and that at this point in time is the elderly who have to pay out of pocket. And then the other large group are younger people who work in businesses that are too small to have a health benefit, including a prescription drug coverage. I would like to say, just to kind of put this conversation in context. Mm-hmm. Congress actually took up this issue in 1959 and held 10 months worth of hearings over the high cost of prescription drugs, because constituents, many of whom were retired in Florida, were having to make decisions about whether or not to buy prescription drugs or to buy food. This is not a new issue. It's just one that has never been addressed, particularly by Congress.
Well, let me just ask you one more question about that, although it's not it's a subject that's somewhat complicated, and that is I'm interested in having you talk about the Medicare prescription drug coverage for people on Medicare, and this was something that the president talked about wanting to do and managed to get its way through Congress, and it was billed as something that would help seniors to pay for their prescription drugs. And there was this intermediate period where there was a sort of a make-do kind of program, and then the actual thing doesn't go into effect until next year.
Correct.
And there were a lot of questions raised about just how adequate this was, how much it would cost, would it cost as much as we were told, or would it cost more? And there seemed to be, at least in this interim period, a great deal of confusion among people as they're trying to make the decision about how should they do it? What plan should they pick? Will it cover all their medicines? Will it cover just some of them? And it seemed that at least when this first went into effect, people were so confused that they just weren't doing it. They weren't taking advantage of the program because they couldn't figure out how to make it work.
There still is a lot of confusion. We haven't seen the designs and of the prescription drug plans that are going to be offered by pharmacy or pharmaceutical providers. We don't know for the pharmaceutical providers that are going to participate in the program what drugs are going to be covered and which are not. It's just as confusing at this point in time for healthcare professionals as it is for consumers. And we'll have to see what happens. I would like to say that, you know, without a doubt, some people are going to be helped by the Medicare Modernization Act. Our big concern is whether or not it will be sustainable, and this is based on the fact that the government is prohibited from negotiating prices with pharmaceutical manufacturers. But this is something that these types of negotiations for prices is something that our federal government already does through what's called the Federal Supply Schedule, who purchase drugs for the Department of Defense, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Bureau of Prisons, and things like that. So the question to us is can the prescription drug benefit for seniors is it actually sustainable under the way under the law as it's currently written?
Well, we have a caller here. Let's talk with them. Someone listening this morning in Indiana on our line 4, toll-free line right here. Hello.
Thank you for getting to me early. I have a couple of questions because I've just had a stroke a month ago, and now I'm learning about prescription medicines, and I find it quite alarming, the things that are going on, almost, I would say, in a sense, are immoral. I'll start off with that the recent increases in prices for meds that basically hit the elderly, and that's the meds for say blood pressure, the meds for diabetes, just to take two, have increased a rather large increase in terms of the general inflation rate. And the second thing is it's never been clear to me, if you could speak to it, you've mentioned a little bit about it, and I've talked to three different pharmacists, and, you know, I'm educated and they're educated, and they just don't know what the hell's going on. They don't know what to say about 2006 or anything. I started thinking the president made such a big thing about there's 30 plans available like that, and that helps competition. Mm-hmm. But the point is, if you're a person that takes a number of pills, and if you have to, if you take one plan at 20 or 25, that company may not make meds for diabetes or something like that that you require. And that's not been clear, so that thing that agitates me, because I need to, since plan my monies I have for retirement now on the long, you know, on the long reach, and I can't do any of that kind of thing. So since to me the competition factor is just a misnomer, and it almost seems to be a giveaway to the pharmaceutical manufacturers, and unfortunately that's what I believe, and that's certainly how I'm going to vote. So if you could speak to those issues, that, you know, I'm on the ground now, and I see it, you know, when I go pay for my meds. And I look about me, and, you know, I can understand there's some increase in transporting things due to the increase in diesel fuel, but and what's going on? I don't buy this thing about what we got to pay for research, for example. I'd like to know if you have any facts that deal with that. I've heard other programs that David's had where people say that the research is taken care of rather quickly of the cells, and that's just a way to hide profit-making. Thanks a lot.
Well, I appreciate the call. I think that we may have lost our connection with our guest, and let me just check again to make sure to see if he's there. Mr. Sasek, are you there? Okay. Well, we can fix that by just putting the call through again, and we will do that, and we will get him to respond to the questions. And if he didn't hear them, I think that I can I will try and repeat them for the benefit of the caller. This will be an opportunity. About this time anyway, I would be reintroducing the guest, and I will do that. In this part of Focus 580, we're talking with Larry Sasek. He is a pharmacist. He is also a research associate with Public Citizens Health Research Group and is a principal author of the book Worst Pills, Best Pills, which has first come out, I think, a number of years ago, is now new in a 2005 edition. And it's a book that is aimed at providing information about prescription medicine to consumers, including ones that they have judged to be problematic and they suggest people shouldn't take. Also, the idea is that they are making some suggestions about if you have a choice between one medicine and another, that's possible that you could pick one that would not only be more effective, but also would be less expensive. So that's something, a resource that you might want to look at. You can find it in the bookstore. You can also go to the Public Citizen website, and you can find a site where they deal with health issues, worstpills.org. And there you can get some of that same information, plus other sorts of information on prescription drug issues. And that's what we're talking about here this morning. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Mr. Sasek?
Yes.
I think we got you back. I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah, the phone just went dead all of a sudden.
Okay. Well, anyway, did you hear the questions that the caller had asked?
I heard the questions from the caller from Indiana.
Okay.
And certainly this individual has faced the reality of the prescription drug market in the United States in a very bad way. And certainly elderly people take most of the drugs, so it's going to put most of the pressure on their budgets. And to the issue about the confusion, as we spoke about earlier, it is extremely confusing. We don't know what plans are going to cover which drugs. And one of the things that we don't like to see happen is that if a patient is doing well on a particular medication and that patient is satisfied with the way the drug is working and that patient's physician is satisfied with the way the drug is working, we don't like to see the medication change just for economic reasons. Mm-hmm. I think that puts a lot of strain and a lot of pressure on patients to make decisions that they really shouldn't have to. But it remains to be seen exactly what the drug formularies are going to look like and which drugs are going to be covered in different geographic areas by competing pharmacy benefit plans.
So basically here, what we're expecting is that there will be a number of plans that people can choose among, and that each plan will have a list of the medicines that it will cover.
Yeah.
So what then people will have to do is sit down with the list of medicines they take, and then they'll have to look at what the plans offer.
Yeah.
And do you think that it is possible that that people will indeed be able to find one plan that will provide all the medicines, or will people have to be making decisions about?
I would hope that they would be able to find one plan, but it's certainly possible that they may have to look at competing plans and pick the lesser of two economic evils.
Mm-hmm. In this country, we have a market-based system that sets prices for prescription medicine. There are no government price controls, unlike in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the main difference, the main reason that there's the difference in price, and generally people here in the United States pay more for the same medicines than people in other countries?
It is, particularly in this at this point in time. Governments in other countries have made the conscious decision that prescription drugs are important for their populations, and they want to ensure access to those drugs, not only for the elderly, but other segments of the population. And so Canada, for example, has a prescription drug pricing review board that that averages the cost of a brand name prescription product from seven countries, including the United States. And the price that Canada uses from the United States is this price that the federal government pays through the federal supply schedule. And this prescription price drug review board was established to make sure that Canada was not paying an excessive price for prescription drugs. And I think it's probably common knowledge right now that that brand name drugs cost 50 to 60% less in Canada than they do in the United States. And the same holds true for the cost of prescription drugs in other countries. What we've allowed to happen in this country is manufacturers set their prices, but they set their prices as monopolists, and so whatever the market will bear. Each brand name prescription drug, because it's protected by a patent, is its own monopoly, and there's no price competition in a situation like that.
Let's talk with some other people who are listening here. We'll go next to Belgium, over near Danville, line number one. Hello.
Good morning, sirs. I have a question about why our government allows these pharmaceutical companies get away with some of the things that they do. And this is, let me point out the example. In the business that I do, I end up at physicians' offices every now and again doing work. And it seems like lunchtime is free food time at these places, because a lot of pharmaceutical reps will bring in any number of types of food and feed these people. And I end up eating some of it because these people say, we're too full, let's give it to him, you know. And
you paid for the lunch.
Oh, no, yeah, I pay. Maybe not me personally, but America in general pays for this lunch.
Right.
And we know about doctors going on trips and stuff. And then if you go over to Indianapolis, in an area which is very strongly drug-related, with Lilly being there,
mm-hmm.
there's an amazing growth around that town where there's a lot of money that's going there. But then I also look at a couple of individuals I know who are drug representatives. They make very, very nice salaries, six
mm-hmm.
figures and upper six figures. Now, is that all involved with the research?
Well, we don't know. The pharmaceutical industry claims that it costs $800 million to get a new drug on the market. What they report is research and development costs are all self-reported. Nobody has independently looked into the books and see what kind of accounting is being done, what amounts to research and development. I suppose it's conceivably possible that the free lunches are part of the development program, and that's part of the $800 million. Some groups, including ours, have looked at this price tag and that industry has established, and it seems to have been taken at its face value very uncritically, and we feel that $800 million is grossly inflated. But it all adds to the cost of prescription drugs, and the advertising, the free lunches, and the free food, they tend to do two things, and I think from our standpoint, and the thing that's most distressing about this is the patients who are having difficulty buying their prescription drugs, important drugs, don't know that doctors and pharmacists are getting free food and free trips. It's those patients that are paying for it. The other issue here goes to in our healthcare system in general, is that because there is such a large amount of influence by the pharmaceutical industry on prescribing decisions, we don't purchase very wisely as a country. And so any new drug that comes on the market, even though we don't know if it's any safer or more effective than an older drug, generally it's more expensive. Cells and health professionals have been very uncritical in their prescribing decisions. I suppose the third thing here is, why does the government...
Well, I'm sorry. I think we may have lost a guest again. I'm kind of confused about why we seem to be having such a problem this morning. We'll put the call through again to the guest, and we'll continue our conversation. And we're about midway through here, so I guess I could also introduce again the guest and the organization. We're talking this morning in this part of Focus 580 with Larry Sasek. He's a pharmacist. He's also a research associate at Public Citizen as part of their health research group, looking at prescription drug issues. He's principal author of their book, Worst Pills, Best Pills. Public Citizen is a national nonprofit consumer advocacy organization. It's been around since 1971. The main office is in Washington, D.C., and they're concerned with a number of issues, including energy and the environment, in auto safety, and also in health. Questions are certainly welcome here. We're talking about prescription drug issues. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Mr. Sasek, I think we got you back again.
Yes.
Sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
I think the last point that I wanted to make, the caller initially raised the issue is, why does the government allow this to happen? This is only circumstantial evidence, and this is from the outside looking in. But we do know that the pharmaceutical industry has more lobbyists than there are members of Congress. And the extent of influence that that is put on Congress there, we think is enormous. For example, the head of the major trade group for the pharmaceutical industry is a former Louisiana Congressman, Billy Tozen, who just kind of walked off of Capitol Hill and walked into an office in K Street as a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk with another caller. And I think that we have... Well, I'm sorry. We've lost the guest again. I guess I really don't understand why we're having such a problem here this morning. But we'd be very happy to take other callers if people have questions. The number here on Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the things that I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about was what consumer, you know, with there are a lot of things here that consumers really have no control over.
Correct.
There we do know when a person is given a prescription by their doctor, there may be some options. That person may be able to choose a generic medication, they may be able to say to their doctor, well, you prescribed medication X. And my guess is there are probably some other ones, and it's possible that medication X might be the newest, the latest, and very likely the most expensive. So maybe you might say to your doctor, well, is there another and perhaps a slightly older kind of version of this, or a medicine that treats the same condition? And maybe it's been around for a while. It's not the latest thing, but maybe it would work as well, and maybe it would cost less. I mean, is it really possible by either going with generics or by going with brand name prescription medicines, but those that are not the newest ones? And is it possible by taking that kind of strategy for consumers to try to perhaps hold their medication costs down?
It certainly is. And any consumer that gets a prescription should call around and get a price for it and then make the decision about whether or not they can afford it. Now, this is for people who have to pay out of pocket. If the price is too exorbitant, that's the point in time that the consumer should get back in touch with the physician and talk about less expensive options. And certainly the case of Celebrex and Vioxx is an important example. Celebrex and Vioxx was about 11 times more expensive than generic Advil when it first came on the market. And we knew at the time that it came on the market that it was no better no safer, more effective than older drugs. So if consumers really were fully informed and told, listen, this new drug is 11 times more expensive, it's no more effective than the older drugs, and it's no safer than the older drugs, which drug would you choose? We also have a general rule, and this largely has to do with safety issues, is that unless a drug is a real breakthrough and there's documentation that it does something therapeutically that older drugs that already available doesn't do, to avoid taking that drug for a period of 7 years. We published a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association a few years ago showing that the majority of drugs that come off the market or require new safety labeling warnings about serious life-threatening adverse effects happen within the first half of them get withdrawn or relabeled within the first 7 years on the market. And there's nothing in our drug approval standard that says that a new drug has to be safer or more effective than an older drug. In fact, if you look at the record over the last 15 years, we've had, on average, one new prescription drug withdrawn from the market for safety reasons. So one of the conclusions that you can say about this is that new drugs can come on the market that may be no more effective, could be less effective, and could be less safe than drugs that we already have available.
That, I guess, I find that confusing, and I'm sure that a lot of people find that confusing, at least in that I'm sure that their expectation is that the federal government and the Food and Drug Administration is requiring the manufacturers to demonstrate that these medicines are both safe and effective before they become generally available.
Yes, but in isolation, there's no requirement that the new drug be more safe, more effective than an older drug, than older drugs that are already on the market. In many cases, the only requirement is that the new drug be tested against an inactive placebo. So consumers don't have any kind of comparative information to make a decision about what drug they should choose, or what drug in consultation with their doctor they would choose. It's a big unknown in terms of comparative safety and comparative effectiveness. It's simply not the standard for drug approval in this country.
I know that there are some people who be prepared to argue that the reason that the cost of prescription medication continues to go up does have indeed something to do with the fact that the drug companies would like to maintain their profits at a certain level, and at a certain point, they don't have the protection on that drug anymore. It becomes available so that anybody can manufacture it, and so that they're one reason they continue to develop new drugs. Sometimes they're drugs that perhaps have only changed slightly from previous versions, is so that they can continue to maintain something that's under patent, and that's good for profit. I guess I wonder, to what extent do you think that the development of new drugs, not just new drugs to treat something that we've never had a treatment for before, but things that are simply new versions of older drugs, or that address, that provide treatment for something we already have, that these new drugs being introduced, that also is a big factor in the continuing escalation of the overall cost of drugs.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. We call these Me Too drugs, and they're very similar chemically or pharmacologically to drugs that are already on the market, and what happens is a manufacturer gets one of these Me Too drugs approved. It's patented, that's where they put their promotional dollars and their advertising dollars to physicians directly to consumers. Now, generic companies, as a rule, don't do that kind of advertising. So instead of a generic being prescribed, what's happening is the new brand name patent protected drug is being substituted for a generic, and sometimes at costs that can be as 10 to 20 times as high as what the generic is.
As we have heard, an earlier caller talked about how drug reps, the representatives of the country, the companies operate. For a long, long time, the way that drugs, new drugs, were promoted was that they were promoted to the physicians. And it made sense because they were the ones that wrote the prescriptions. Because one thing, though, that has changed, certainly within the last, and I'm not sure how long it's been now, maybe 10 years or so, maybe not quite that long, is that now...
1997.
All right.
August of 97.
That's what I'm... You know where I'm heading, and that is the increasing advertising of prescription medicines to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And we see these ads in print, and we see them on television, and the idea is, obviously, the manufacturer wants the patient to go to the doctor and say, I want this medicine. And that it was something that didn't happen before. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how that change occurred. And is there anyone who is talking about maybe that wasn't such a good idea and that we should go back to not advertising drugs to consumers?
The FDA changed the rules in August of 1987 that allowed broadcast ads, both radio and television ads, that didn't have to be accompanied with the full disclosure of information about the drugs. This is the information in what's called the package insert. That's the tightly wrapped piece of paper in the little tiny print that goes with a bottle of medication to the pharmacy. And the FDA changed the requirements and opened the door for direct-to-consumer advertising. And we think that it has definitely produced more problems than it has alleviated, and we certainly think that it has added to the inappropriate prescribing of prescription drugs. In the direct consumer advertising realm, in this situation, the consumer is still left without a source of objective information about the risks and benefits of that particular drug to balance what they see in newspapers, on television, and in magazines. So consumers are really at a disadvantage on the information playing field, and the field is slanted always in favor of the seller, and the consumer is there essentially left in the dark because they don't have a reliable source of objective information.
Let's talk with another caller here, someone here in Champaign-Urbana on our line number one. Hello.
Interesting. The news says that consumers here pay some of the highest pill prices in the world. How does that work then? Who's paying for research elsewhere? And what about these retired people who make trips over the border and they pay for their whole vacation? How do they do that? And they buy their pills, but as the news says, they import the same back into this country. Now, is it exactly the same, or do they mean just a similar chemical formula that's made somewhere else? Because Brazil and some countries want to start making their own generics at much cheaper prices.
Some of the brand name drugs that, for example, some of the top sellers, for example, say Lipitor, the cholesterol lowering drug, all of the Lipitor is produced in Ireland. Some of it is shipped to Canada, and it's repackaged with Canadian labeling and Canadian packaging. And some of the Lipitor is shipped to the United States, and it's put in U.S. labeling and U.S. packaging. And it can be 60% more in the United States than it is in Canada, even though it's manufactured in the same facility in Ireland. Other countries contribute to research, and I think pay their fair share as far as research dollars go. The research card is that pharmaceutical industry plays, I think, is really a red herring. This has been something that they have been claiming that they need these types of profits to do research since the late 1950s, at a time when we first knew that the pharmaceutical industry spends more money on advertising than they do on research and development.
The caller made reference to the fact, and we certainly, this is something that we have heard a lot about in the last couple of years, of people trying to keep down their prescription cost by buying their medicines outside of the United States, either
yes.
by physically going or by buying online.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the government has raised some questions about whether or not people can be sure of what it is they're getting. Are they getting genuine medicine? Is it going to be safe? And so forth. Do you have any figures about just how what the trend is in terms of people trying to buy their medicines someplace outside the United States?
Well, we think right now that the best figures come from Canada, and we think that it's about $1 billion worth of drugs a year, at least over the Internet. We have no way of exactly tracking people who live in the northern tier of states that have easy access to Canadian pharmacies and how much is spent out of pocket in Canadian pharmacies and then brought back in the United States. But this is something that has been going on for a long, long time. It's not a particularly new phenomenon. It's just since the price of prescription drugs has escalated so rapidly in the last 10 to 15 years, and so many people are getting pressured, economically pressured, budgetarily pressured, that this issue has once again come back into the public view.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk with someone here in Urbana, where we are, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I turned in late, so you may have said this during the first half of the period, but I'd like to get your comments on the safety and effectiveness of Prevacid, Prilosec, and Nexium.
Well, they all meet the regulatory standards for safety and effectiveness. The comment that I have to say about Nexium is one of those drugs that was developed to purely protect market share and to protect the sales that would be lost when Prilosec became a generic drug, and then subsequently is now a non-prescription drug. And it's very easy to determine that a dose of Nexium costs right around $4, and a dose of Prilosec OTC around 67 cents, and they are, for all practical purposes, exactly the same drug. And several years ago, the former head of CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, told a group of physicians in Washington, D.C., that you should be embarrassed if you're prescribing Nexium, because you're not only, and I can't say the word on the radio, taxpayers, but patients also. And so this is one of those situations where a new drug was developed, Nexium, not because of any public health imperative, but only to protect sales.
Can you say something about Prevacid, perhaps, and maybe also these drugs haven't been around for that long. How about long-term effects of these proton pump inhibitors?
Well, right at this point in time, I'm not aware of any safety signals that are of major concern. I think the biggest concern here is, are those the drugs that are necessary? I don't know your medical history, so I don't know, and I'm not going to do prescribing over the telephone. But if it's being used for simple heartburn, there are a number of alternatives that are less expensive, that are equally effective and work faster, including some non-pharmacologic interventions.
Yeah, and anything about Prevacid?
Now, I'm just going to talk in the most general sense here. I think the issue is, I don't know your medical history. If it's being used for just simple heartburn, there are ways that consumers can save money by using other drugs other than proton pump inhibitors.
Yep. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Well, there, here again, this is a particular illustration of something that we've been talking about. The company, and I think this is AstraZeneca.
Correct. Correct.
Made this medicine Prilosec. It was available for a long time by prescription, and it was enormously popular. There were a lot of people taking it, and they were getting to the point where they knew their patent was going to run out.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, Prilosec now is available as an, as you say, as an over-the-counter medicine. You can just walk into the pharmacy and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, as a way of trying to maintain their profits, they developed Nexium, which is essentially the functionally is supposed to be the same.
Yeah.
And as you say, one dose of Nexium costs $4, and one dose of Prilosec OTC costs 67 cents. So essentially, they're supposed to do the same thing, and one is much, much less expensive and available without prescription. Are there other cases where other medications have other companies have done the same thing? They've had something and they said, look, we know we're going to lose this. Let's go and develop a next generation of this so that we can continue to try to keep the money coming in.
Another really good example is the antihistamine Claritin. And when Claritin was about ready to lose its patent, the company developed Clarinex, which is essentially a breakdown product, a natural breakdown product in the body of Claritin. And what the strategy was going to be was that, and this is a general strategy that we think that drug companies follow when their blockbuster drugs are facing loss of patent protection. A new drug is developed that where there's no evidence that it's therapeutically superior to the old drug. And while both drugs are still patent protected, a lot of money is spent convincing doctors and patients that they should switch to the new drug, because then the patent protection runs farther out into the future. It looks like that this kind of strategy usually begins with around 2 years before the blockbuster drug is going off patent. Then the second stage, the second part of this strategy, is if it's a likely candidate to go OTC, then they'll develop for OTC status. And the first company that gets an OTC drug on the market also has exclusivity in the marketplace. So the whole strategy is based around how long can we have a monopoly position in the marketplace for the longest period of time. And that's not exactly a good public health strategy or a good public policy strategy.
We have about 10 minutes left in this hour. I guess I should just introduce one more time our guest, Larry Sasek. He's a pharmacist. He's also research associate with Public Citizens Health Research Group and principal author of their book, Worst Pills, Best Pills. We're talking about prescription drug issues. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, we've talked about the fact that Americans pay more for their medicines than people do in other countries. In some cases, mm-hmm. it's the same drug. For example, you talked about the fact that all the Lipitor there is manufactured in Ireland, and then it's shipped to other countries. So it all mm-hmm. comes out of the same factory, but people, for example, in Canada and people in the United States do not pay the same for their Lipitor.
Correct.
People in the United States pay more.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it seems highly unlikely that we would be seeing any kind of government intervention in terms of capping prices or controlling prices. And it seems that the only place that there anybody seems to have any leverage would be large institutions, healthcare institutions that, or perhaps state governments, that would be in a position to buy enormous amounts of the medicines and negotiate some kind of deal with the manufacturers, and then from there to try to provide that with patients. I mean, it sounds as if that's about the only thing that's really open.
That's really the only market option that's open, and it's one that other countries do, and that's to negotiate with companies for prices, and we think that that's what needs to happen in the new Medicare bill, or with the Medicare drug benefit, for it to be sustainable. The last estimate that I saw from the Office of Management and Budget for the cost of the Medicare Modernization Act out to, I think it's 2015, is approaching $900 billion. And as you remember, the administration came in initially with a projected cost of around $400 million, but for a slightly shorter period of time. And we've either got to start negotiating for prices, the government does, or we have to start buying more wisely. And it seems to me that if we're going to use taxpayer money to help support or to help ensure that older Americans have access to prescription drugs, that we shouldn't be paying the price for Nexium when we can buy Prilosec OTC, and it's the same thing. I mean, they're therapeutically equivalent, but there's a fourfold difference in the cost. We can't afford to keep doing this.
We have a couple of callers here, and we'll try to get them in the time that remains. They're both on cell phones. So first in line is our line number four right here. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. I have a few comments about your pricing and the situations with the pharmaceutical. First of all, the pricing, if you go in the United States, if you look around, you can buy different products at different places for extremely differences of price. You go to the Ritz-Carlton, you buy a Coca-Cola, and it might cost you $3. You can buy it someplace like Dollar General, and it'll cost you considerably less. So the place of where a product is marketed is going to determine its price, and the clients that who can what they can pay is going to determine its price. In addition to that, patent products are extremely more expensive than generic products, but you got to keep in mind that there would be no generics without brand names first. And I totally agree with you. There are a lot of these situations where the products are not necessarily better, but maybe the patent system ought to be changed so that when a new product comes out, is it proven to be clinically superior to other products? And then they will have either a longer patent, and if they're not superior to the existing products, maybe they ought to have a shorter patent. And this way we would encourage brand new, clinically superior products rather than Me Too's. There's a number of other issues that I think that you ought to consider, that people that have no income often can get free medicines through pharmaceutical companies or discounted medicines, and I think that these things should be brought out also, because it does help the patient, and these are things that you should mention in that, because there are a lot of people. In addition to this, the healthcare system is 15% of medicine is the cost, not where the perception is much higher than that. And I think if you ask a physician and you do all the tests and everything of this nature, if they do not have a medicine, then they are not. They're not going to do lab tests, they're not going to do x-rays, because there's not going to be a treatment for them. So, and I think you have to put this in fair balance in many different respects, which I don't quite think you're doing. Thank you.
I partially agree with the caller, and there's some other issues that I disagree, I think, moderately strongly with. The free drug programs for disadvantaged individuals are a tremendous amount of paperwork, not only for patients and for physicians and healthcare professionals. It adds a lot to the overhead of at a physician's office. Don't totally disagree with doing something with the patent law in rewarding those companies that truly do something innovative in terms of developing a drug that is where there is acceptable evidence of clinical superiority, and rewarding that manufacturer. I don't think most taxpayers would mind paying for a premium price for a better drug. I think the public has been beginning to realize that paying the Nexium price versus Prilosec is that harms not only individual patients who have to pay out of pocket, but also the entire healthcare system. Legislation was proposed 40-some-odd years ago that would have brought market competition back into the brand name drug industry by only allowing a short period of exclusivity and then compulsory licensing to other manufacturers to compete on a price basis in the market. In terms of the prices of prescription drugs at different pharmacies, this is certainly something that consumers can do. The price of a prescription drug in different pharmacies to a large extent depends on that particular pharmacy's overhead. And independent pharmacies, the small pharmacies in particular, for the most part are willing to work with patients that require long-term medications for a chronic disease, and prices can be negotiated, but those negotiated prices are only a fraction, only reduce the cost of a fraction compared to the situation in Canada, where the Canadian federal government is actually negotiating the reimbursement.
Pardon me for jumping in. We're just at the end of the time, and we're going to have to stop. For people who are interested in learning more on this issue and reading more about the activities of Public Citizen, you can go to their website, which is www.citizen.org. Our guest this morning, Larry Sasek, is the research associate with the Health Research Group at Public Citizen, one of the principal authors of Worst Pills, Best Pills. Mr. Sasek, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, David. It was great being with you.